Welcome to Cut and Thrust, your podcast for the bloody and sometimes bizarre journey through the Middle Ages. Whether it's dark battles, questionable hygiene, or hair-raising rulers, here you'll get history as it really was, raw and unfiltered. So grab your sword, put on your helmet, and let's dive into the wild world of the past.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Battle Merchant podcast. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. And today we've got a topic that most people probably don't even have on their radar.
Mules in the Middle Ages. An animal that was truly one of humanity's most important companions for centuries, and yet barely gets a mention in the history books.
The crazy thing is, mules were practically everywhere. In agriculture, in transport, on military campaigns. But because they were so taken for granted, the chroniclers hardly ever mentioned them. They were just there, like the air we breathe.
Although, first we should probably clarify what a mule actually is, because that actually gets mixed up quite a lot.
Let's start with the basics. A mule is a cross between a horse mare and a male donkey, also known as a jack. And then there's the hinny, which is the other way around, a female donkey, or jenny, crossed with a stallion.
And the difference isn't just academic. Mules were clearly preferred throughout history for a very practical reason. The horse mare, as the mother, gives birth to a larger, stronger foal. With a small jenny, the foal of a large stallion would be, well, significantly more problematic in terms of birthing.
On top of that, jacks are easier to pair with horse mares than the other way around. So nature already makes it easier in one direction. That's why there have always been far more mules than hinnies worldwide.
The result of this crossbreeding is truly fascinating, because the mule combines
the best qualities of both parents, the strength and endurance of the horse, and from the donkey, the sure-footedness, the frugality, and that calm temperament.
And that's no small thing, by the way. A donkey isn't just a small, stubborn horse, as many people think. Donkeys are highly intelligent animals that check every step before placing their foot, especially on difficult terrain. The mule inherits that trait.
Which is completely different from how a horse behaves. A horse tends to bolt in panic situations, often blindly. A mule, on the other hand, stops, assesses the situation, and then reacts. That's what makes them incredibly valuable in the mountains or on narrow trade routes.
And when it comes to carrying capacity, that's kind of, how should I put it, a truly unique feature. Relative to their body size, mules could often carry more than horses. We're talking about loads of around 150 kilograms, with which these animals cover daily marches of a good 30 kilometers.
And all that while needing significantly less feed than a horse. They could graze along the roadside as they went and got by on much sparser fare. That was obviously an enormous logistical advantage, especially on long transport routes.
What many people also don't realize is that mule breeding has an ancient history. It goes back at least 3,000 years. Mules are already mentioned as draft animals in Homer's Iliad, and archaeologically we know of equid bones from the battlefield at Kalkriese, although distinguishing precisely between horse, donkey and mule is difficult.
Although it was the Romans who really established mule breeding in Europe. Mules were so important to the Romans that there were even specialized mulomedici, literally mulus plus medicus, meaning mule doctors. The general veterinarians, by contrast, were called veterinarii. That alone says a lot about how highly they were valued.
And there's a biological quirk that makes the whole thing even more interesting. Mules are almost always infertile. There are extremely rare exceptions with female mules, but basically, horses have 64 chromosomes, donkeys have 62, and the mule ends up with 63, an odd number, which means cell division doesn't work properly during reproduction.
That means every single mule has to be deliberately bred. you can't build up a self-sustaining mule herd. You always need horse mares and checks, again and again.
And that is exactly what made mule breeding such a lucrative business in the Middle Ages. Good specimens often fetched higher prices than average horses.
Which is surprising at first glance. But when you consider that you have to breed each animal individually, and it's also more robust and more frugal than a horse, then the higher price makes perfect sense.
And it wasn't just about carrying loads. Mules had a soft, even gait that also made them popular as riding animals. But we'll get to that in a moment.
Because there's a wonderful story about clergymen and humility that I absolutely have to tell. Now it gets really interesting, because we should talk about the role that mules played in concrete, everyday medieval life. Not just as a biological curiosity, but as an economic factor.
Transport was actually an enormous economic factor. Overland, depending on the terrain, people used wagons, often with oxen, sometimes with horses, and pack animals like mules or pack horses. Waterways were ideal, of course. River transport was cheaper and faster. But as soon as there were no rivers or the terrain became mountainous, you needed pack animals.
And that's where the so-called mule trains come in. These were organized caravans, often 20 to 50 animals, led by muleteers. They transported heavy loads over long distances. Salt, wine, textiles, spices, metals, basically everything that was traded.
What many people underestimate is the direct comparison with oxen. Ox teams were cheap and incredibly strong. They could move several hundred kilos with a cart, and under good conditions, even up to a ton. But they were slow. We're talking maybe 10 to 15 kilometers a day.
Mules, on the other hand, could easily cover double or triple that daily distance, 25 to 30 kilometers, and with a substantial load. They weren't meant for heavy cart transport on flat terrain, but rather for routes where no wagon could get through anymore. Steep paths, unpaved trails, mountains.
And that's exactly the crux of it. There were trade routes in medieval Europe that simply would not have functioned without mules.
The Alpine passes above all, so the Gotthard, the Brenner.
The Septimer. That was an important Alpine pass with pack animal traffic. Not as heavily used as the Gotthard or Brenner, but a real alternative for the connection between Graubünden and Milan. Over 2,000 meters in altitude, narrow mule trails. No ox cart was getting up there. That was only possible with pack animals, and mules were the first choice for it.
And the Pyrenees just the same. The Somport Pass, for example, one of the important routes for the wool trade from Aragon to France, alongside Roncesvalles and the Col de Portalais. The mule caravans often travelled parallel to the pilgrims on the Way of St. James. Trade and faith on the same paths.
Although these mule trains were, of course, seasonally limited, nothing got across the high passes in winter. Merchants had to get their goods over the mountains in time during autumn, otherwise everything ground to a halt until spring.
All of this makes the logistical achievement even more impressive. The Italian city republics, Venice, Genoa, they organized long-distance trade in a truly professional manner, through trading companies with fixed routes and rest stops. The hospices at the passes themselves were run by monasteries, like the Augustinians at the Great St. Bernard, but the whole system meshed together perfectly.
What made these trade caravans so valuable wasn't just the goods on the animals' backs. As we mentioned earlier, a well-trained mule was itself a considerable asset.
Exactly. An enormous amount of capital was moving across those alpine passes. And you also had to supply these caravans along the way, which, logistically, could have been a real challenge.
Although, that's exactly where the great advantage we mentioned at the beginning came into play. on those incredibly long routes. A horse would need huge oat reserves for a mountain crossing like that.
The mules simply nibbled on the sparse alpine vegetation during their breaks. That saved an enormous amount of weight in feed transport, which in turn meant you could load more valuable trade goods. An unbeatable logistical advantage.
And on top of that, there's their longevity. Mules could live to 30 years and beyond, significantly longer than most working horses. So the investment really paid off in the long run.
Which explains why breeding them was so profitable. Demand was high, supply was limited by their infertility, and the animals were simply economically superior for long-distance transport. It's basic supply and demand.
By the way, if topics like these interest you and you want to learn more about everyday medieval life, feel free to leave a like and subscribe to the channel. That really helps us dig up even more stories like this.
And there was yet another aspect that set mules apart from oxen. Oxen were the workhorses of agriculture, indispensable for ploughing, but tied to the farm. Mules were the long-distance travellers, the shuttles between economic regions.
Essentially, each animal had its niche. Oxen for local work, horses for war, prestige, and fast couriers, and mules as the backbone of long-distance trade, especially in difficult terrain.
Which makes them one of the most important economic factors of the Middle Ages. Without pack animals, especially mules, but also pack horses, the alpine trade that connected northern Europe with the Mediterranean could hardly have functioned in this way.
And that brings us back to what we said at the beginning. They barely get a mention in the chronicles. They were considered so much a matter of course that nobody thought it necessary to document them in any detail. Now we come to an aspect that personally fascinates me the most. Mules weren't just pack animals. They were also riding animals, and specifically for a very particular social group.
Clergymen. Bishops, abbots, high-ranking clerics, they preferred to ride mules. And this was primarily for practical reasons. Clergymen travelled a great deal, visitation tours, pilgrimages, church councils, often for weeks on end over difficult terrain. Mules, with their endurance and calm temperament, were simply the better choice.
Although there was also a second dimension to it. In the Middle Ages, the horse was the symbol of the warrior, the knight. Riding a horse signaled military power, and a clergyman deliberately wanted to set himself apart from that.
The symbolism ultimately goes back to the biblical tradition. Jesus' entry into Jerusalem, on a donkey, not on a war horse. That was a very deliberate sign of humility and peacefulness. And the mule, as a descendant of the donkey, carried that symbolism forward.
In the Old Testament, mules were even considered the riding animals of the royal court. In the Davidic era, it's in 2 Samuel 13, they were the official mount for kings and princes. Horses, incidentally, were only introduced for military purposes under Solomon. So the symbolism was actually quite layered, not just humility, but also, well, dignity and authority.
And that's where it gets a bit paradoxical. Because in the sources, high-ranking figures are described on lavishly adorned mules. So on one hand, riding the animal of humility, and on the other, decked out with silk clothes and silver fittings on the bridle.
That's that wonderful medieval contradiction. You preach humility, but your mule is wearing an embroidered cloth in the colors of your diocese and silver fittings on the bridle. The message was probably more like, I'm powerful enough for a horse, but I choose the mule.
Ah, so performative humility. Modesty as theater.
Wouldn't be the first time in the history of the church. But it explains why good mules were so expensive. They didn't just need to be sure-footed and enduring, they also had to look the part. A large, handsome mule with an elegant gait was a status symbol, even if it was sold as a sign of humility.
But what really occupies my mind is the issue with the sources surrounding all of this. Mules played such a central role in everyday medieval life, and yet they hardly appear in the chronicles. The earliest known German mention apparently comes from Wolfram von Eschenbach, so not until around 1200. Durst already pointed that out in the 1920s. Although, to be fair, hardly any manuscripts from before that period have survived anyway.
That's because medieval chroniclers focused on wars, rulers, and
symbolic events. Everyday animals were narratively uninteresting. War horses had names, wore armor, got mentioned in battle reports. Mules just did their job, quietly and reliably.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. Feeling curious? Then head over to battlemerchant.com. They've got all sorts of medieval stuff, from costumes to armor and loads more. Totally worth a look.
On top of that, there's an archaeological problem. Mule bones are extremely difficult to distinguish from horse bones. There are isolated hints of mule finds at medieval castles, but reliable identification really only works through DNA analysis. And research so far has mainly focused on Roman-era finds. The actual prevalence was almost certainly much greater than the finds suggest.
That's the classic dilemma of everyday history. What's taken for granted doesn't get documented. Nobody writes down that they ate bread this morning, and in the same way, no chronicler noted that 20 mules carried the supplies over the pass. It was just normal.
And there's another point that weighs heavily from today's perspective. There are indications that mules were sometimes treated worse than
horses, which isn't surprising when you consider what the hierarchy looked like. Horses were regarded as noble, were well cared for, got the best stabling. Mules were utility animals, tools of the trade.
Although you also have to put that in perspective. There are hardly any direct primary sources about mistreatment. What we know is more inferred indirectly. Horses held an almost honorable status in feudal society. Mules simply did not. And that difference in regard most likely showed in how they were treated as well.
Which is ultimately one of history's great ironies. The animals that provided the most reliable service, that were frugal and made no demands, weren't rewarded for it. They were simply taken for granted. That says a lot about the relationship between humans and working animals, then and now.
And it explains why we know so little about them today. What isn't valued isn't recorded. Mules quite literally helped carry the medieval economy, and the sources on them are thinner than those on many a nobleman who spent his entire life in a single castle.
Now, the obvious question is, what actually happened to these animals? In Europe, mules have almost completely disappeared from everyday life.
In most countries, yes. Mechanization from the 1950s onward pushed them out of agriculture and transport. But there are regions where they never stopped being important. Spain, for instance. Mules are still bred and used there in significant numbers to this day.
And from a global perspective, they're anything but forgotten. In mountainous areas, there are fields of operation where mules still outperform any machine. Narrow paths, steep terrain, no fuel needed. And what many people don't know, the German Bundeswehr maintains its own training and deployment center for pack animal operations with its mountain troops in Bad Reichenhall. Mules are trained there to resupply areas where no vehicle can go.
And in forestry, they're still being used as well, especially in sensitive woodland areas where heavy machinery would cause too much damage. Mules are the gentler alternative. They don't compact the soil and don't need cleared lanes.
Which brings us to an experiment that's really quite illuminating. Someone imported a mule from Spain to ride it and even train it for use with weapons. An attempt to recreate medieval usage in a very hands-on way.
And the initial findings were immediately fascinating. Anatomically, the first thing you notice about a mule is the narrower neck, plus the large ears inherited from the donkey. The overall build is more similar to a horse, but the hooves are harder and more compact, more like a donkey's, optimized for rocky ground.
When it comes to riding, the differences show most of all in behavior. A mule responds much more sensitively to the rider's movements than a horse does. They pick up on the slightest shifts in weight and react to them. That can be surprising at first, because as a rider, you suddenly have to communicate much more precisely.
That's exactly that level-headed nature we discussed earlier in the context of steep mountain trails. The animal doesn't panic. It assesses the situation independently. As a rider, you have to allow for that independent thinking and learn to communicate in a completely new way.
What fascinated me the most was the aspect of medieval deployment out in the field.
The sword training. The mule behaved remarkably calmly during training with the sword. Some tension upon impact, sure, but overall calm and attentive. No bolting, no shying away.
And that fits with what we know about these animals. The combination of horse strength and donkey composure shows itself in very concrete terms in situations like that. A horse might react more sensitively in a situation like that, but it depends heavily on the individual animal and its training.
Although the report also makes clear that there's still work to be done. Especially when it comes to getting the animal used to the bit, for example. Working with a mule requires a great deal of empathy and patience. Pressure gets you absolutely nowhere with these animals.
That's really a key point. Mules cannot be forced. If you use force, you can wait weeks before the animal will cooperate again. You have to convince them, treat them as equals, as a partner. The training takes more time than with horses, but the bond at the end is all the stronger for it.
And that actually brings us to the heart of this entire episode. For centuries, mules helped carry the weight of everyday medieval life. They made trade across the mountain passes possible, served clergymen as riding animals, and accompanied military campaigns. And they did all of it with a reliability and frugality that really deserved more recognition.
The way we treat them also reveals something about us as humans. True partnership can only come from respect and patience. That was true in the Middle Ages, and it's just as true today. These animals give an incredible amount when you approach them with the right understanding.
And perhaps that's the most important takeaway from this episode. Mules were never the glamorous animals. No war horses, no parade steeds. But without them, much of what we know as medieval civilization simply wouldn't have worked. That deserves appreciation.
And with that, we've reached the end of this episode. If topics like these interest you, history from a different perspective, then head over to battlemerchant.com. On the blog, you'll find plenty more articles about medieval life, equipment, and history. There's something fascinating for every history enthusiast.
Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time.
And so we ride towards the end of this episode. Keep your sword sharp and your mugs full. We'll catch you in the next one.